think the danger comes in when you're like, somebody told me that this little penny stocks that cost $2 is going to be the next Google or the next Microsoft. That's when people get in trouble, when they're buying companies that don't have a track record whatsoever. And then you're like, oh, you're hoping for the best.
Welcome to the Journey to Launch podcast with your host, Jamila Souffrant. As a money expert who walks her talk, she helps brave journeyers like you get out of debt, save, invest, and build real wealth. Join her on the journey to launch to financial freedom in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
If you want the episode show notes for this episode, go to journeytolaunch.com or click the description of wherever you're listening to this episode. In the show notes, you'll get the transcribed version of the conversation, the links that we mentioned, and so much more. Also, whether you are an OG journeyer or brand new to the podcast, I've created a free jumpstart guide to help you on your financial freedom journey. It includes the top episodes to listen to, stages to go through to reach financial freedom, resources, and so much more. You can go to journeytolaunch.com/jumpstart to get your guide right now. Okay, let's hop into the episode. Hey, 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 journeyers. Welcome to the Journey to Launch podcast. Today, we have a special guest, Maybelle Nunez. She is the founder and chief education officer at Girls on the Money, a stock market investing education company targeted towards individuals who are underrepresented in the investing world. She teaches highly rated courses centered on stock market investing and is the author of 2 best-selling books on the subject. She is passionate about transforming investing from beginners into confident, knowledgeable, and profitable investors. Maybelle's mission is to teach what she learned and continues to learn throughout the start of her investment journey to now. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast, Maybelle. Welcome.
Hey, Jamila. Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. So and to talk about my favorite topic, which is investing. So thank you for having me.
Yes. Well, before we hop into that, because I know my listeners, my journeyers, we want to learn how to make our money go further for us, how to reach financial independence. But I really want to understand your journey a bit more and your story. So you are a New York girl, a New York girly like me.
Yes.
But your family immigrated here, I believe. And so I'd love to hear your origin story of growing up here in New York City and what that was like for you.
Sure. So yeah, I'm an immigrant. I came from the Dominican Republic with my family when I was 9 years old in the early 90s. So I grew up in the South Bronx. I went to public schools all of my life. When we got here, you know, as any immigrant, we have very limited resources. So we had to kind of make do with whatever we had available. And that kind of taught me from an early age how to like be frugal, how to like live within my means and things like that. But like I said, yeah, I have very humble beginnings of public education. And then thankfully, when it was time for go to college, my dad, I don't know how he did it, but he managed to save enough money to allow me to go away to school, which was rare in my family. Like nobody had ever done that before. So I was able to dorm and go through that whole experience, which I'm always grateful for. So the economics of my family early on were challenging. But thankfully, you know, eventually, you know, we went forward from that. But that's, you know, that's kind of how I started.
Right. So I'm assuming education was very important in your family growing up and for you. So it sounds like your dad did a good job of saving money to help you with school, but I'd love to hear the dynamics of that.
Yeah. So my dad was very big on education. Like for him, school was the end all be all, especially as we were growing up, to the point that I had friends that had summer jobs or like after school jobs at McDonald's. And I was like, I wanted to work at McDonald's because I thought that was so cool. You know, when you're growing up, you're like, oh, my friend is working. He has a job and or she has a job and they're earning money. But my dad would not have it. So even when I went to college, when I wanted to have part-time jobs or even like work study, he would not have it because his mentality was, I want you to get educated. I want you to get a degree so that you can have a good job and things like that. So he felt in his mind was that if you start making money at a very young age, you're going to like fall in love with money and you're going to leave school in the background and you're going to forget about school. So that was his mentality, even though that's not really the case for most people. That's how we approached it. So I didn't get a full-time job, a 9-to-5 or, you know, an official job until I graduated from college because of that. But thank God, you know, it worked out. I was very scared because you have no work experience as you're in school. Like a lot of people have internships and things like that, but I didn't have any of that. But thankfully, by the grace of God, I did get a 9-to-5 in corporate America and things like that. But that's pretty much was the dynamics in my family. Like you said, education was the priority and there was nothing else. I have a sister. So for my sister and I, that was it until we graduated. So.
Yeah. Well, that's so interesting because I know that sometimes like in families, especially growing up, immigrant families, you're expected to do well in school. And then you mostly sometimes have a job to help with the family or your own expenses. But I find, and probably for you, the case was, even though you didn't work outside of school, that school was your job. Like you had to probably get good grades, right? And that was a priority, like you said.
Yes, exactly. Oh, absolutely. Like I would be scared to like come back with anything less than a B or B plus. Like I'll be terrified because that was my job. So,
right.
Exactly.
As a parent, and you're a parent also, you know, I always love to hear stories like our generation and like how we were raised. And now that we have our own kids, what we're going to do, because I don't want to lose the recipe that made us so driven. But then I also know not everything or the way things were done for us were always right. And so how do we make more of a balance to where we are like having our kids explore more of their passions and not be maybe so tied up in the system and grades, but also knowing that being so focused on grades and studying gave us good work ethic.
Yeah, that is very true. So to find that balance is going to be hard. But yeah, like, I guess we can take the pieces that we think work well and like kind of balance things out. But yeah, it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me about your college experience. So did you actually end up getting loans or how did that work out for you?
I did. Yeah. So I filled out the FAFSA. Like I got some like Pell Grants or things like that. But I also had student loans involved with that, even though my dad also paid a portion of my college tuition. My sister and I are 4 years apart. So when I was in college, she was just starting high school. So thankfully he had like that little break, like where it's just me in college. So a lot of his paycheck went to my college tuition because, you know, room and board, even though I went to a state school, I went to SUNY Albany upstate. I wasn't in a private school. It was still expensive, especially for an immigrant parent. It was just him, is his only income. And he had like a regular blue collar job. So most of his paychecks will go to my tuition. But thankfully, by the time I got out of college, even though I did have loans, it was less than $20,000. So it wasn't like I didn't have massive student loans. Once I got my full-time job, I was paying it off slowly and things like that. But yeah, I did. It was part of my whole college package to have that in there.
Yeah. And very practical going to a state school versus a private tuition and, you know, being in state and getting those credits also, I'm sure, was very helpful. So very smart of you.
Yeah, I'm grateful for that. And honestly, it just worked out that way. I wanted to go to like Columbia or NYU. Like that was my dream, you know, like these fancy New York City schools. I applied, I didn't get in, full disclosure. And then looking back, I'm like, that was a blessing because how I was going to have my dad paying a Columbia University tuition. So thank the Lord, like things worked out as they did. So, or any other private school kind of thing, you know.
Right. And at that moment, you probably thought like, oh, my gosh, that's like so not good. It's the worst thing. And like, look how it helped you on your path.
Yeah.
What did you study while you were in school? What did you think you wanted to do? And then what did you graduate into your full-time job doing?
So when I started college, it was right in the middle of the whole like tech world, like early 2000s. I'm aging myself. That was like the whole, you know, internet boom and things like that. So I wanted to be a computer science major. So that was my dream. I'm like, oh, I'm going to work in computers and this is so exciting. But then I took a computer science one-on-one class and it was like slap in the face because I didn't understand anything. I got a tutor. I'm like, I'm determined to get this. It didn't work out. And then thankfully I had an advisor that sat me down and he said, hey, computer science is not working for you. It's okay. Like, don't get discouraged. Let's explore business school. Like maybe you like the business curriculum and things like that. And I'm like, all right, I'll give it a try. Because I really had no idea what I wanted to do after. Like computer science was like my dream for whatever reason. To this day, I'm like, what was I thinking? So he like said, like, take some business classes, see if you like them. And I ended up really liking them. It's specifically a finance class that I took as a business major that kind of changed my life because it kind of like made me discover what I'm doing today. But yeah, I started as a computer science major. I graduated as a business and finance major by the time I was done. So,
well, tell me about that experience. I read somewhere that you realized quickly in one of your classes that you needed to pivot.
Yeah. So when I started my business classes, I was taking like marketing and accounting and things like that. And I was like, whatever, especially accounting. I found it so difficult. Thankfully, I passed. But I was like, OK, this is interesting. Like the marketing classes were fun. But then I took an investing analysis class. And that was my first semester of my junior year. So I was kind of getting into the business school, like taking more business classes. But that class kind of like changed my life because it opened me up to a world that I've never ever been introduced to, like the world of stocks and investing. I know some people like that are in high school now or have, you know, where they were in high school, they would take like stock classes and things like that. But that wasn't my case. I went to a very basic Bronx high school investing classes. Like the closest we got to like a personal finance class was an economics class, which is funny because my teacher, she was very honest. She's like, listen, I was assigned to teach you economics. I'm learning with you. I don't know what I'm doing. So she was very honest. And that was the extent of my personal finance education in high school. So when I got to college and I took that investing class, I was like, oh my God, like, because I thought it was so cool. The way my teacher taught it, it was like, you as an average person making a regular paycheck, you can own a portion of the biggest companies in the world through investing. So I was like blown away. Like back in those days, there was no really podcast. So I would listen to like AM radio about stock, like investing, like weird stuff, like read articles online and things like that. I became really obsessed with the topic. And that was it. Like, I was like, okay, I'm going to be a finance major and I'm going to be an investor and I'm going to work in Wall Street. It didn't really happen that way, but that was my dream after taking that class. I mean, it honestly just changed my whole trajectory after that.
And so now you graduate and you have this business degree. What do you graduate into doing?
So like a lot of people, I graduated with my business degree, my finance degree. And like I said, my dream was to work in Wall Street, in investment management or investment banking, whatever. But first of all, I'm like a Latina. I have no connections to Wall Street whatsoever. Like I had no connections to that world, period. So I ended up getting hired at a corporate job within the insurance industry as an underwriter and claims analyst. So I worked in insurance for almost 10 years of my life because once I got that 9-to-5 corporate job that was really good with like the benefits, it was really hard to get out of that. So I was just in that world for a very long time, the insurance world. But alongside that, I was not really investing yet, but I was like still obsessed with investing. I decided to get an MBA because I loved investing so much. So I eventually eventually I'm going to get into that world. Like that's my dream. But it was like a parallel world because I was working in insurance and then I had like my dream on the side. So that's what ended up happening after I graduated from college.
Right. Well, you said something interesting. So you said you weren't investing yet. I think this is interesting because conceptually, you were very seemingly obsessed with the idea of investing. You understood it to the point you changed your majors. But there seemed to be like a disconnect in you applying it to yourself and the real world for a bit. Right. So talk about that, because I feel like that happens for a lot of people.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So even though, like I said, I was obsessed with the topic, I graduated as a finance major. I was like reading all these articles, listening to all these shows. I was still very scared to invest. Like I was terrified. I'm like, okay, I have my little bank account. I trust the banks because that's what's standard. But I don't know if I put money in this investment account, is this really going to work? Like I was still very skeptical of the whole investing world, like selecting investments and things like that. So it wasn't until my corporate job, my first job in the insurance industry, I always like to say that like the universe places people in your life like that you are aligned with sooner or later. So this person he was a new hire and they sat him right next to me. They could have sat him anywhere in that office, but they sat him not right next to me. And I was the type of person like soon after you meet me, and to this day I'm this way, like if the topic of investing in stocks and funds comes up, like I go off. Like that's like my passion. So he like made a comment about a stock one day and I was like, oh my God, like this is my guy. So I started like talking to him about investing and how much I wanted to invest. And this was like 3 years after I graduated from college. He was like, I don't know, early 20s, like 22. He's like, I've been investing since I was 16. Like, this is my thing. I'm like, oh my God. So he was the one, even though I already knew how to open an account and things like that, he was the one that showed me like, hey, this is a real world. This does really exist. Like, and you can participate and you can make money. You just have to know what you're doing. So he kind of showed me, like he showed me his account. He showed me how he makes investment decisions and things like that. not really telling me what to do, but you're showing me that in tangible ways, like this really does exist. It's not all in my head as like a passion that I'm dreaming about. It's really something that people do and they become wealthy from it. After that like little conversation that I had with him, I opened the account finally. I put some money in it. I started investing and the rest is history after that. And the thing that really motivated me to keep going was, and this story I've told it before. So like 3 months after I opened that investment account, I only put like maybe $600 because I was still very like skeptical. And then I have my bank, I have my savings because I've always been a big saver. So just to like put things into perspective, I had like thousands of dollars like saved just because like, you know, I was living at home like with my parents and things like that. So they allowed me to like save money as a young adult, like in my early 20s. So I had all this money in my savings and I only had $600 in my investment account. And then 3 months later, I see that my investment account grew by like $50. I'm like, okay. And then that same week, I had gotten an email from my bank telling me that I made like 25 cents or 20 cents from my savings. And I was like, are you freaking serious? I couldn't be like this bank is obviously not giving me anything. And then like just by investing in like this quality company, I'm already like it wasn't really the $50. It was like the discrepancy of having thousands in the bank versus a few hundred in an investment account and how the difference between what I was making in either one. So after that, I changed my, you know, I adjusted my accounts accordingly. But that kind of like blew my mind in terms of what was possible.
Yeah, a few things there you mentioned is the fact that even though you knew in your head investing made sense, you knew the things to do, that you still weren't doing it until you saw someone in real life who you could see as an example and tangibly show you. And I think that's so important for so many people. I always say people mostly know what they should do. And yes, some of it could be not understanding. And so you need to do more research. But a lot of us know what we should do to get our finances in order to become investors. But why aren't we doing it? And a lot of it is fear or not really understanding the difference in what accounts you should open and feeling paralyzed from moving forward. So with that, I do want to make just a couple of clarifications or at least maybe start with defining some terms here. Because I know investing can mean different things for different people or the type of investing that you're talking about. And so when you say investing and the way you started doing it actively, what type of investing was that? And how does that differ from the standard investing in your retirement accounts and your 401k at work?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. It's important to clarify. So when I started on my own, like before that, I forgot to mention that I did open a 401k with my company and I was contributing to that. So that is a form of investing. If you're already doing that, you are investing. You're not doing it like yourself, but you are already allocating money towards that. So I already had that in place with my employer. But what I'm talking about specifically is opening a self-directed investment account where that I manage, that I select what I'm buying and selling. I started out with stocks. That was my first introduction to the world of the stock market, individual stocks specifically. And I've always, from the beginning, I've always knew that I was going to be like a long-term investor. Like I was never attracted to day trading, to sitting in front of my computer all day looking at charts and making decisions based on charts. I respect people that do that to each their own. But to me, that's always seemed like gambling. And I've been terrified of that. I've been investing for almost 16 years. And not once have I made a decision based on a chart. But I understand people, like I said, they have their own strategies. But my approach from the beginning, from day one, has been, obviously, I do my research and my due diligence. But one of those characteristics that I've always looked for is companies that are going to be around for many years or generations going forward. I was never attracted to like fleeting businesses that are here today, gone tomorrow, like the latest trends, whatever. I was never attracted to that. So I've always been very long term from the beginning, to the point that to this day, this summer, I always remember this is my stock anniversary. It's going to be this summer, 16 years. The first stock that I ever bought, I still own it to this day. So that's how long-term I am. I rarely ever sell anything. With my students, I tell them like there are reasons that you can sell your stocks. Obviously, I don't expect people to be like me. You know, people have specific goals that they want to reach. So I always offer that strategy to my students. Like if you're saving for this or that or investing for this or that, like this is the point where you sell. But like I said, to me, I believe in the long-term approach, like the Warren Buffett type of strategy that you know people like that follow. So that's like specific, like to your question, individual stocks, but always with a long-term approach. That's kind of like how I started that.
Right. And self, so this is self-directed taxable account that you're using.
Yeah, exactly. So taxable. So it's not like a Roth IRA, even though later on I did open a Roth and a traditional IRA. Later on after that, after I started investing, but when I first started, it was an individual taxable investment account.
Right, right. Now, tell me a little bit about progressing through your working career and the point at which you started your business on the side, which eventually became your full-time business. So walk me through what that looked like for you.
So like I said before, I worked in insurance most of my career with a very big insurer that's around to this day. They're huge. But during that time, my obsession after my 9-to-5 was always like investing. So like I was telling you earlier, I pursued an MBA because I'm like, okay, eventually I want to work in Wall Street. I want to work in an investment bank. So maybe getting an MBA is going to be my window for that. And I can tell you right now, if anybody out there in your audience is thinking of getting an MBA to be an investor, please don't do it. I realized this very early on as I started the MBA program. You don't learn anything about being an investor. When you're in an MBA program, you're learning about, you know, corporate finances, corporate marketing, corporate everything, but nothing specific to being an investor. And I was very naive when I started my program, but then it got to a point where like, okay, do I stop the MBA and quit, or just do I finish it? And I did make the decision to finish the program or, you know, get the degree. But then thinking back, I'm like, I didn't need to do that to do what I'm doing today, but whatever. So by the time I finished the MBA, I was like, okay, I have already started grossing the money as like a side hobby. So I was either, okay, I could either pursue my Wall Street dreams or just kind of see if this works. Because it's like, it was my passion. So I'm like, if I work in corporate America still, it's still going to be corporate. I'm still going to have like my passion on the side. So let me see if I can make this business work. But before I made the decision to pursue my business full time, I did want to prepare myself financially, because by the time I was like getting my MBA and things like that, I had bought an apartment. So I wasn't even with my parents anymore. I had a mortgage to pay. I had bills to pay. I had my college tuition. And at the time, I changed jobs. So my previous employer was paying for my MBA. The new employer wasn't. So I also had my MBA bills coming in. So it wasn't that I could just quit my job and sit in my apartment and see what happens next. I had to like be very strategic about saving and investments so that I could feel comfortable leaving my full-time job to pursue this full-time. And that's what gave me the motivation and the confidence to pursue my business full-time. So even though a lot of people say, you know, I hate my job, I'm fed up with it, I'm going to quit and just figure things out, I wouldn't advise that. When I know like there's the point where like it's affecting your mental health and it can be toxic, I understand those circumstances. But if you're able to prepare yourself financially before you pursue something full time, I recommend to go that route. Because when you're sitting at home trying to figure out how to get clients and things, it could get very dark and frustrating if you don't have anything in the bank that can add to your stress. And you don't want to be in a position like for me, I was like, I don't want to be in a position where I'm desperate for clients and desperate for whatever. I want to be in a position where like I can grow my business with confidence and at peace because I know that my bills are going to be taken care of. So it wasn't until I got to that point that I decided to say, okay, I'm going to pursue grossing the money as my full-time business.
How were your spending and money habits at this point? Do you consider yourself a frugal person? Did you adhere to a budget? And I'm assuming you made a decent amount of money to be able to buy an apartment and to kind of pay for all the things you were paying for. But how were you able to save? And I don't know how much you saved. So if you want to share that in terms of the runway for you to leave your job, how were you able to do all those things? What did your money management system look like at that time?
Yeah, so I've always been very frugal. And I think that comes from my beginning stories of coming from an immigrant family that had very limited resources. I grew up with like kind of like a scarcity mindset, in full honesty, in full disclosure, because I had limited resources as a child growing up. So when I became an adult and I got a full-time job, my scarcity mindset was still there. So I was saving the majority of my paycheck to the point that people are like, think that I'm crazy. I got to a point where I was saving close to 50, 60% of my paychecks. So I would literally just pay for the regular living expenses, like whether it was just the basics when I live with my parents versus like my apartment once I moved out. I would just focus on paying that. I wasn't big on constantly spending money on random things. So the only like splurge that I would do is traveling. Like I really love traveling in my 20s and things like that. So that was my biggest splurge, I would say. But other than that, I was extremely frugal. So it comes with its pros and cons. But in addition to that, at the beginning, I didn't know like, what am I saving for? Like, what is the point of this? But then eventually I'm like, okay, like I'm getting to the point where I can actually leave my job and pursue my dream of, you know, of owning my business without any stress. So that was my kind of like my approach. Like the saving part was always there for me. I did have like debt, but like nothing crazy, like, you know, regular credit card. By the time I was ready to quit my job, I think I had like maybe $3,000 in a credit card. And I was like, I'm going to pay this off before I quit. Like it wasn't like nothing major. And I became a parent recently, but that was in my late 30s. Like all through my 20s and my early 30s, I was a single individual. Like just living my life. You know, I have my expenses, my personal expenses, but I didn't have to take care of children. So I understand other people, obviously, they have different circumstances. So that's another thing that played a role in that, in me being able to save the money and be and invest my money because I was just worrying about myself, nobody else. That all came together to help me take that step of comfortably leaving my full-time job.
Now, how did your parents feel about this and your family? Because I know that is a big factor for some of us, especially if education and you went to school to get this degree and to get this safe job. So now you're thinking of leaving it and planning to leave it. What does your family think? How do they react?
Oh my God. So it was hard. Like I'm sure a lot of people can, especially immigrants can relate. I didn't want to tell my parents that I was going to quit my job. I didn't tell them right away either. I think I told my dad, especially because I was terrified of his reaction. I told him like 2 months after I quit, I was really terrified to tell them because they raised me to go to school and get these degrees. They really pushed the MBA. So part of the reason why I finished the MBA was because of them. So in full disclosure, and I don't think I've ever said that out loud. So now I'm like, oh my God, because, you know, oh my God, my daughter's getting her master's. How am I going to quit the master's? Like, God forbid. So that was part of the reason, right? So yeah, it was very, very hard to the point that when I told my mom that I had quit my job, I was sobbing. Like I was in tears, like, I'm sorry, like that I did this. It was hard. So I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, I really want to do this business. Like, I really love what I'm doing. Like, I'm earning money. Like, it's not like I'm just sitting at home waiting for clients. Like, I'm earning money. It's going well. I'm paying for my apartment. So I did leave my job. And they were fine with it. Like, my mom was like, it's okay. Like, you know, if this is your dream, it's fine. And my dad was more understanding than I expected. He didn't make a big deal out of it. He was just like, okay, like, I wish you would have kept your full-time job and did this on the side still, but it's all right. But yeah, that's how it went. I cried my eyes out, but they were okay with it eventually. And to this point, they still like, they know what I do, that I work from home and that I don't go to an office every day. And they know I'm into investing and that I teach investing and things like that. So they understand what I'm doing. But yeah, like any family, and especially immigrant families, I'm sure it wasn't their ideal thing for me to do, to live a comfortable 9-to-5 with a 401k and great benefits behind to just pursue this dream or this this thing that they're like, okay, good luck type of thing. So
right. Well, I know a lot of journeyers, listeners right now are like, can feel you right now because they're probably maybe in a career, in a program, really not because they want to do it, but because the expectation and they don't want to disappoint their parents. So how do you begin to follow what you want and not the expectations of others despite what they think is best for you? I think so many of us are living for other people. We don't want to disappoint. And especially when you come from like immigrant families or just cultures in general, that whereas collectively, like you are together, like I sacrificed all this for you to do something different or better or to make money. And like, here you go, what they feel like you're doing something different or veering off the path. So that can be like a whole nother episode for a lot of us or people who feel that way.
Yeah.
Hey, Journeyers, if you are loving this podcast, then you will love my book, Your Journey to Financial Freedom, a step-by-step guide to achieving wealth and happiness. I wrote this book for you. This book is for you if you want a clear and enjoyable path to having more money, options, and a rich life. This book is for you if you hate your commute and the fact that you need to seek approval or permission from a boss. I hated that when I worked. This book is for you if you weren't born into wealth, you didn't marry rich, or win the lottery, but you still want freedom. This book is for you if you're at a crossroads, a major decision or event is imminent. Maybe a career change, marriage, starting a family. Pressures are reaching a tipping point, and the discomfort and the desire for more can no longer be ignored. And this book is for you if you find yourself zoned out at meetings, looking out the window, or daydreaming about the life you truly want. So go pick up yourjourneytofinancialfreedom.com so I can show you how to map out how to get from where you are today to where you ultimately want to be and enjoy the journey while you're on the path. Head over to yourjourneytofinancialfreedom.com to see where you can pick the book up. It's available on Amazon, bookshop.org, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore, everywhere. Go to yourjourneytofinancialfreedom.com to get the book now. I do want to talk a little bit about what happened, and I feel like this happened for me, is that your passion to start your business, to teach other people about investing, stemmed from your personal experience of investing and having success, right?
Yes.
How for you did you maintain still working and making sure your house was correct, meaning your investments, you were still doing what you needed to do versus as a business owner, teaching other people how to do this and trying to grow a business and make it profitable? I find that behind the scenes when I talk to other entrepreneurs, especially in the finance space or just in general, is that you sometimes forget about your own finances and goals because you have this business and you're trying to now spend your time and focus on something else other than yourself. So how did that go for you, that balance?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And like, I never really thought about that, but it's true though. Like, once I started like my business of teaching investing and writing these books and like doing these workshops and things like that, like my personal investing took a back seat. But thankfully, like I said earlier, I'm very long term. So I knew that, you know, whatever stocks and funds that I own, I had no reason to like make adjustments or sell anything. Because like I said, I own stuff for years. So behind the scenes, things were just running as usual. Like I'll go into my account every now and then to check that, everything is good or whatever. Other than that, everything is like, it runs itself kind of thing. That's how I build my investment portfolio. And that's kind of what I teach people to do. Like, build your portfolio to the point where it's something that you can just leave it alone and go live your life. Because like I said, I'm not the type to be like constantly checking my accounts. I think that kind of helped me focus on my business because I wasn't really adjusting my portfolio. So I got to focus on what I needed to do to like get new clients or sign up more students or like continue writing my books and things like that. So yeah, it wasn't really as difficult just because of the way that I invest, I would say. But in terms of like my personal finances, yeah, like I had to like make a commitment to like sit down once a month to like pay my credit card bills, like send money to my savings account, pay my mortgage, whatever. So I did have to like schedule time on my calendar to do things like that just to keep things running smoothly. But other than that, it wasn't that hard.
I do want to get a bit into now like investing specifically. I want to make a disclaimer that Mabel and I are not your investment advisors and are not giving specific investing advice, but I do think that people do want to hear more about just, you know, philosophies around investing. And the first thing I do want to start out with is that you are an advocate for investing in specific companies. So buying company stock, like individual company stock, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I am a big fan of index funds and, you know, low cost index funds. We buy every company in that index. So I'd love to hear from you. What do you think of index funds? What is for you the benefit in investing in a single stock versus just investing in all the stocks and kind of riding the return out? Because I know that sometimes a back and forth between people within this space is, you know, oh, you can pick a stock and you do better than the average, or why don't you just buy all the stocks, you know, buy an index fund at a low cost and not worry about that. So I'd love to hear your opinion.
Yeah. So index funds, I love, specifically ETFs. So eventually within my business, even though I started off with like mostly content on individual stocks, I did started investing in ETFs, and they're also excellent exchange traded funds. That's the full name. But the reason why I'm so adamant about individual stocks is because I started with stocks, like we talked about earlier, and I've seen how powerful returns can be when you own individual stocks. But I'm not talking about just anything, even though it sounds like it doesn't make any sense, but I'm conservative in a way with individual stocks, meaning that I only buy cream of the crop, quality number one companies in different industries. So everything, like the most powerful companies in the world that are like up there in their industries, that's what I buy. I don't get into like startups, penny stocks, up and coming, like the next Amazon, the next Google. I don't really care who's next, who is the first right now, like who's been the first for a very, very long time. That's how I approach individual stock investing. So I think the danger comes in when you're like, somebody told me that this little penny stocks that cost $2 is going to be the next Google or the next Microsoft. That's when people get in trouble, when they're buying companies that don't have a track record whatsoever. And then you're like, oh, you're hoping for the best. And that's how what has worked for me, just buying the best of the best. And then with funds, with index funds and ETFs, I think that is also excellent. Like if somebody were to just buy funds and build a portfolio from that alone, that's also excellent. You're also benefiting from equities and, you know, stocks. The only difference is that when you're buying individual stock, let's say that Microsoft goes up, you know, by 20% 1 year, but then Microsoft is also part of like the S&P 500. Let's say the S&P 500 only goes up like 8% that 1 year. You're only going to make that 8% because Microsoft is part of a basket, is part of that index, like you said. So your returns is going to be an average of all the companies in that basket. Whereas if you own that individually, your return is going to be dependent on only the performance of that one stock. So that's why how it can differ. But it can also go the other way. Like if you're buying an individual stock that does horribly 1 year, that is down 20% or 15%, but it's part of an index that's up 8%, then you're benefiting from buying the index instead. But you never know, because you obviously there's no way to predict the market. We can't know what's going to happen from one day to the next. That's the risk that comes with investing. Like there's no free lunch with investing. Like either you're taking more risk by buying an individual stock, you are taking more risk because your return is only dependent on one company, whereas you're being more conservative when you're buying a fund, but you're taking less risk. So you're going to, there's like a fine line when you're trying to select from either one, but you can always have a balance of both. Like in my portfolio now, I have a balance of both. I have individual stocks. The majority is stocks, but I do have a lot of funds too, or a good amount of funds that kind of covers pretty much everything I want to cover in terms of sectors and industry. So it's good to also have a balance. But like I said earlier, if you wanted to have a portfolio of all your funds, I think that's also excellent. So
I do want to just like set up some definitions just in case this may be someone's first time listening and they're like, wait, go back. What is an index fund and what is an individual stock? So can you just give like maybe just one sentence or two sentences defining both?
So an individual stock is like if you were just to buy shares of Apple by itself or Microsoft or Nike or Alphabet, which is Google or whatever, when you're buying only the individual stock by itself. When it comes to index funds or exchange traded funds, you're buying like a basket of investments that can include all of those companies just in that one basket. So if Microsoft costs $300, you can buy a basket that includes Microsoft and Apple, and an example that would be the S&P 500, for example, that have all those major companies at a fraction of what it would cost you to just buy one individual stock.
That's perfect. I wanted just to go back for anyone who may this be the first time they're hearing that. Now, let's go back to the stocks, the tried and true stocks that you like to buy, right? What comes to mind are the big companies. And you said a number, but it, you know, I know you just threw that out there. But some of these major companies, like their stock price, individual stock prices is very high. And so a lot of people feel like, well, that's why I'm trying to find the next one so I can get in at the bottom and then ride out and get the big return. So what do you say in terms of people feeling priced out that, you know, I want to buy an Amazon, I want to go buy a Google, but I can't afford that. It's so expensive. What do you say to that person?
Yeah, so I completely understand. Most of these stocks that are up there are like, you know, $300, whatever. They're pricey, especially just buying one. You want to buy like, you know, five or 10 shares. So I understand that it could be very expensive. So the way I tell people that they can get around that is either buy an ETF or an index fund that contains that company. And for your listeners, if somebody out there doesn't even know where to start with that, just look at an S&P 500. You can literally just Google S&P 500 ETF or S&P 500 index fund. And you're going to get results from like Vanguard or Fidelity or whatever. They're all the same investment. Like, it's just different companies that sell the exact same thing. So just pick one and you can call it a day with that. I'm not saying you to go buy it, but I'm just giving you an example of how to research that. The S&P 500 just literally has all the biggest companies. The 500 largest companies in the world that are publicly traded are in that fund. So you can literally go and buy that and you'll be covered. Like I said, when I'm giving investing advice, but just giving you an example. Whereas, like I said, if the individual stock is too expensive, you can also buy fractional shares. The only two brokers that I know, actually three, that allow you to buy fractional shares are Fidelity, Schwab, and I think Robinhood, because I think they started doing that. They started the trend. What that means is, like, let's say you want to buy Microsoft, but Microsoft is $300. If you only have $100 that you want to allocate towards Microsoft, you can literally just buy $100 worth of that stock. You don't have to buy the full share that costs whatever it is you can buy. If you only have $50, you can buy a fraction of that stock for with your $50. And like I said, there's only a few brokers that allow you to do that. And it's called fractional shares. That's the two routes that I recommend taking, either the fractional shares or the funds if you think that the stocks are too expensive. But don't fall into the trap of buying these cheap stocks because they're going to be the next best thing. If you want to allocate like a small portion of your portfolio to like those like maybe happens, maybe doesn't type of thing, you can. But just don't think that just because you got an email that somebody had the secret for the next whatever, that is true. Because most of the time, those are scams, like straight up, like 99% of the time, they are trying to scam you and they're just making money from whatever you're paying them to get these secrets or whatever. So,
what is your philosophy on investing? You're making sure you're on track for retirement investing. So, you know, investing in that 401k and Roth IRA. And if you have that through your company, investing as much as you can versus how much to allocate to the investing that you're talking about. Because I know that you can set what your goal is for your investment account. So even for what you're talking about, buying individual stocks and your brokerage account, that could still be what you consider your retirement money. But I often think that some people try to skip ahead to doing the, okay, I'm investing and I'm not even doing tax advantage investing, meaning your retirement, but I'm just going to invest in a taxable account because that feels more exciting and I can be more hands-on. Versus, like you said, if you're investing in a 401k, you're an investor, but so many people skip over that. So what is your thought process on what people should be doing first and focusing on before they dive maybe into more hands-on investing?
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So absolutely, if you have a 401k, a 403b, or if you work in an employer that offers a retirement account, 100% contribute. Hopefully they have a match, so you're getting like free money. Like especially if they have a match, take advantage. If they don't have a match, then you know it becomes a little bit more like, okay, should I still contribute? But the benefit of that is that you're automatically already building an investment account because they're taking a percentage from your paycheck and you don't have to think about it. But if your company doesn't have a match and you don't want to like go through their 401k because of that, you can always open like a Roth IRA. Like there's different rules and stuff like that that you have to keep in mind, or a traditional IRA, whatever's more better for you based on your income and things like that. But you can always save and invest for retirement on your own if your company doesn't have a match and you're like, you know, what's the point? But I do suggest absolutely focusing on that first before you open a self-directed investment account to invest, and also have a goal like for your self-direct, like even though, you know, your 401k or your Roth is going to be for retirement specifically, then if you're going to have a self-directed account, like what is your goal with that? Like, are you saving an investing to build your business eventually, or which was like kind of my goal? Or are you doing that to buy a home? Or are you doing that to put a down payment or to buy a new car or to like maybe travel somewhere like, you know, your dream destination or something like that, like kind of like 5+ years from now, kind of long term. So always have a goal with that self-directed investment account, because if you don't, like, okay, if you're just investing for the fun of it, okay, that's part of it, because I see, in my eyes, I see how it can be fun because I do it and I enjoy it. But then you're going to kind of lose track of what exactly are you doing it. So always have like that, whatever it is that you want to do with that money, just kind of have that in the back of your mind. Like we said, yeah, definitely first and foremost, allocate money towards the 401k, the 403bs, because, you know, ultimately, maybe you'll be able to retire earlier than most people, or like have a more comfortable retirement, you know, whatever it is that your vision is, you know, it's going to be funded by those accounts.
Right. So I know, obviously, you're an investor, you teach others how to invest in the way that you're describing. But for me, even when I think about investing in retirement accounts, like, I know retirement is like this thing we think about that's far away. But for me, investing in my retirement account is what allowed me to quit my job. And then, you know, what's allowing me to hopefully be able to retire early, because I have accumulated all this money in those accounts to keep me safe. So for you, what is your goal? I know that you have this business and you're teaching others, but you're also building wealth for yourself. So I think one of the things about being an entrepreneur or a business owner is that, you know, you can have a cash positive company, you can be doing really well, but then that has to translate into your own like personal finances for you to build wealth. What are your goals for yourself? Like, do you see yourself having this company for long term? Do you see an exit strategy where, you know, you want to retire early or reach financial independence? What are the goals for you?
So I love what I do. It's like it grew from a passion that I had for many years. And it's going to be almost 2 decades since I kind of like started this passion. I don't see myself like selling my company or like stop doing it and just doing something else. I feel like even if I do something else, this is always going to be part of my life because it's like my baby and it's been with me for so long. So I think one of my goals is always to be in a position where I can experiment with my company or pursue different projects and things like that without being stressed out about money. And thankfully, that's when I started the company, that's kind of how I felt. Like, I'm like, oh, okay, I can do this at peace without having to be stressed out. So I always want to maintain that for myself, to be able to have that cushion in the background to continue growing my business or pursuing like different ventures or different things without being stressed. And even in the downtimes, because, okay, we're business owners, but we're not always in the middle of good times. Like, there are rough years. And people don't tell you that. When people go on the internet and tell you, quit your job, start your business, you're going to be working at the beach every day, like, please. I'm like, I roll my eyes every time. Like, seriously, like, get out of here. And we have rough times. So, you know, if your business is going through a rough time, you're like, okay, I have my cushion. I don't have to work. I don't have to be all stressed and like, oh, my God, like, I'm just going to stop doing this and, you know, just go to a 9-to-5 because I can't afford this anymore. So I always want to be in a position where like mentally I'm like, okay, whatever's happening, I am going to be good. And then, I don't know, I can't see myself, even when I, you know, reach retirement age, I can't see myself just letting it go. I'm going to have to eventually. But if you ask me that now, I'm like, ah, no. So yeah, I think that will be my goal. And also like, obviously like early retirement, like to get to a point where I'm like, okay, like, I really don't need to do this at all anymore. Like, I still have to work. Like, even though I have my investments and things like that and my savings, you know, I'm still like, you know, fairly young, I guess you could say. So I still have to like maintain my life and things like that. So maybe it'd be nice to get to a point where like, oh yeah, I don't have to work at all. And this is just my hobby, period. Like, it'd be nice to get to that point too. But other than that, just to, you know, continue to grow my business and with peace of mind.
I love that. It's one of the things where we have to continue to check back in on, like how we're feeling and being real with people listening, watching our story and maybe seeing some of the success is that there are pros and cons to every, whether you are a 9-to-5er or entrepreneur. And one of the things I want to make sure I circle back with, and we can maybe end on this, is 2 points. I would love for you to give advice for people who feel stuck walking on a path that is not their own, that is more influenced and led by other people because we don't want to disappoint them. What advice you can give based on your experience from making that leap and following your passion? And then maybe one last investing advice for someone who's, you know, wants to hop in, wants to get more serious about investing.
Yeah, thank you. So I would say, yeah, it's hard. Like when you're living, especially when you're younger, I feel like when you're in your 20s, early 20s or, you know, early 30s, whatever, you're like, oh my God, like I want my parents to be proud of me, or like my husband, whoever, to be proud of me. So it's hard to like steer off into doing your own thing without feeling that you're disappointing others. So I've been there. So I completely understand. I think the way to do that is to like still pursue what you want to do, you know, on the side. Like, don't just like drastically quit everything and just focus on that one thing 100%. Like, some people might say, yeah, that's the way to do it. But I'm more cautious with that stuff. You know, start doing what you love. Like, no matter what, just do it, even if it's on the side, like I said. But then you're going to get to a point where you got to decide, okay, 40 years from now, am I going to regret not pursuing this business? That's the road I was on when it was like, I had like the best paying job ever. Like, when I was like, the job that I had before I started my business was like the best pay I was ever making. So I'm like, am I going to regret in the future like that? I chose this paycheck over my dream of starting this or pursuing this passion. And by the way, this was a passion that I've had, that I had for a very long time already. It wasn't like something that I thought about like a week before. I'm like, oh, I'm going to leave my job because I have this idea that I thought of yesterday. It was like a dream that I have been building on for a long time. So I'm like, I was thinking to myself, like, yes, I will regret not pursuing this business if I just choose my job over it. So that's how I approached it. And then you just worry about yourself and your happiness. Like, yeah, some people might be disappointed or whatever for a little bit, but their happiness doesn't depend on you. Like, they're responsible for their own whatever. You're going to be going to sleep at night thinking these things. So are you going to be regretful of not pursuing just because you don't want to disappoint somebody else? So, you know, that doesn't make sense. So, yeah, just start doing it. See if, you know, if it's working and you feel good about it. Eventually, you're going to be able to do it full time. And just focus on your own happiness, like I said. In terms of the investing advice, I guess for somebody that hasn't invested yet or whatever, I think for me what worked, even though like we said earlier, I had all these degrees and all these passion, and I was still not doing it. I think what helped me continue was taking action. So just like doing the bare minimum, or I don't want to say bare minimum because it takes a lot for some people. It took a lot for me to like open that first account and depositing those first $100 and maybe buy a piece of the S&P 500. Just like set those little milestones for yourself. And I know for some people might be like, oh my God, that's too slow. That's too baby steps. But some people need that. Like, some people are like terrified of the stock market. They're like, oh, I want to participate, but I'm still like, I don't get it. Is it really going to work? So just for those people, like, baby steps do work. So just do a checklist for yourself. Like, by this day, I'm going to open the investment account. By this day, I'm going to deposit $500 or $100, whatever it is. And by this day, I'm going to buy the S&P 500. Like, those three steps, and like, and then do that and then just see how it goes. And after that, you're going to build on it. Like, I think action breeds confidence.
I love that. Oh my gosh, Mabel, this was amazing. If you made it through this interview, then that means you are definitely on your way. And so you should be very proud of yourself, especially if you have not started investing yet. But I'd love for you, Mabel, to tell everyone where they can find you on social media and your website and where they can follow you.
Sure. So Girls on the Money is across all platforms like Instagram, Facebook, like everywhere. That's my business name. Also, I know Substack is like a new thing for a lot of people. So you can also find me on Substack. I have like a newsletter there. Those are the two main places you can find me at Girls on the Money.
And what's your website?
Oh, it's girlsonthemoney.com. And then if you put my name, Mabel Nunez, on Amazon, like, my books should come up, so you can check that out too.
Well, I will link all of that in the show notes. So wherever you're listening to this episode, just click more description or go to my website and you'll see this latest episode with the transcription and all the links so you can find out more about Mabel. Thank you so much for joining the show, Mabel.
Thank you, Jamila. It was so much fun. Thank you so much. And hi to your audience.
Don't forget, you can get the episode show notes for this episode by going to journeytolaunch.com or click the description of wherever you're listening to this. And you can still grab your jumpstart guide for free to help you on your journey to financial freedom by going to journeytolaunch.com/jumpstart. If you want to support me and the podcast and love the free content and information that you get here, here are four ways that you can support me and the show. One, make sure you're subscribed to the podcast wherever you listen, whether that's Apple Podcasts, that purple app on your phone, your Android device, YouTube, Spotify, wherever it is that you happen to listen, just subscribe so you are not missing an episode. And if you're happening to listen to this in Apple Podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe there. I appreciate and read every single review. Number two, follow me on my social media accounts. I'm at Journey to Launch on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and I love, love, love interacting with journeyers there. Three, support and check out the sponsors of this show if you hear something that interests you. Sponsors are the main ways we keep the podcast lights on here, so show them some love for supporting your girl. Four, and last but not least, share this episode, this podcast, with a friend or family member or coworker so that we can spread the message of Journey to Launch. All right, that's it. Until next week, keep on journeying, journeyers.